It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947?
And Rainey is discussing this is how we're going to kind of keep this very quiet so that higher authority can handle it. Is that what happened?
Pretty much so. I couldn't find anything to nitpick.
You have said that it was definitely not a weather balloon. What do you think it was?
I don't really know. I'm not certain of the whole thing. I feel that there's been information released that maybe shouldn't be.
Can you kind of remember about how big it was? How much space it took up in the hangar?
I would venture a guess that probably a diameter of somewhere around 25 feet.
When you saw the body in the hangar, partially covered with the tarp, you only saw the one?
Yes.
People have said that you have seen the debris field, and you deny that.
No, I've seen the debris field. At that time, I did not see it.
In 1947, you didn't see it.
Didn't see it.
That was Walter Hout talking. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin. And welcome to Roswell Preview Show Number 2. I would like to thank Wendy Connors right off the bat for her help on the Walter Hout opening and the soundbite fadeddisc.com. And by the way, we have a pretty much an exclusive of Walter talking about what he actually saw later in the show, so stay tuned. This is our second in our series of Roswell shows. We're going to present both sides this time. Later in the program, we're going to have a man, William Lyme, who was with the Air Force Security, and he is going to say no aliens at all, nothing like that ever happened, on and on and on. You'll find his interview fairly interesting. One of the things I found out about it that I thought was interesting was how many people have spent a lot of time, and the U.S. government has spent a lot of money trying to debunk things. So that alone makes it seem like there's something happening. And Larry Dickin is with us, our executive producer, our resident UFO expert again. And Larry, on yesterday's show, we talked about Walter Hout and the affidavit, and we'll get back into that in a moment. But really, I think there's a preponderance of evidence that Roswell probably was visited by aliens due to a UFO crash of some sort.
Well, it would certainly seem so, Jerry. this story has been investigated, talked about, written about, TV shows done about for the past 40, almost into 50 years. There was some period of time from 1947 up through 57 when not a lot was said about it, but after that things started to cook a little bit. But it really was not until authors like Stanton Friedman and Kevin Randall and of course Tom Casey and Don Smith, all these various parties began to write books and do research on this. And I know Stanton started his work back in the 1980s. And
and if anybody wants to know about that, we have a very interesting interview of Stanton that's been there for some time on his page about how he discovered
right.
it.
But I can certainly remember when I was a young man, God, when was that? But back in the 1960s, reading stories about Roswell, and these weren't full investigations. These were mainly anecdotal stories that were being told in various books written about UFOs at the time. And, of course, as time went on, serious research ensued. And, but after all of this time, the story still remains extremely confusing. The fact that an ET craft, or perhaps even two craft, crashed in the state of New Mexico during the first week of July in 1947, I think the evidence for that is pretty overwhelming in terms of eyewitness accounts that corroborate with each other.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that's really difficult to deal with. Of course, it's been 60 years coming up here in July, either 3rd or 4th, and we'll talk about that as well. No one really knows the date.
No, they don't. You know, I have even heard stories, and I can't quote a particular researcher. However, Stanton pretty well covered all the bases in his crash at Corona, in terms of the various time frames and possibilities, and the fact that Brazil was brought in, you know, from the debris site area. He wasn't brought in, he brought himself into Roswell. And however, once he got there and made his report, he was sequestered at the police station for several days, and when he came out, his story had changed a little bit. So, you know, this added some more confusion to the matter. Of course, that was part of the government cover-up with
Yeah, well, we're not even sure where his ranch was, is where the major activity
right.
was.
And
we'll get into that also
right.
in a moment.
So,
we held up this show because we were waiting for another lead we had, and it's just like most of the others. The man was sincere, telling us the story, but here again, he was 8 years old at the
right.
time. And so, it's just hard to
right.
verify when you have 60
right.
years.
Right, except for the fact that it did corroborate other eyewitness accounts, and that's what's important. The more eyewitness accounts that you have with independent witnesses that definitely have no acquaintance with each other, the more important their testimony is.
Now you talked to Don Schmidt, he was telling you that there's several eyewitness accounts in this new book.
Oh, many new ones. That, and again, as I said, cooperation is what's important here. This is what really nails it down as being something that definitely happened and was definitely covered up. Let me retrogress just briefly on the date issue so that we can make sure that people understand the time frame here. Is that the crash scenarios, and there are multiple scenarios, and we'll discuss that shortly, occurred in the time frame from July 2nd through July 4th, and somewhere between 11:30 and midnight on each of those nights. Now, the July 2nd date comes into play because on that night there was a reported sighting of a disc overflying the town of Roswell itself.
Now, this is the nuns,
right.
story, right?
And, of course, there are various experts that question the fact that these people were telling the truth. The only thing is that I think they were telling the truth on what they saw, but this really had nothing to do with the crash. In other words, this was just another UFO sighting. However, there were some people who tried to connect the nun sighting of the UFO passing over Roswell with the actual crash north of Roswell.
The thing, and it's come clear here as we talk about these crash sites, the plains of St. Augustine, if that was this part of the same crash, it was pretty far away, but it was near the same date.
Yes, it was.
So what I'm trying to say is maybe there were several UFOs in that area during the time, and I think originally in an in-office memo to you, I said that really strains credibility. You could have two UFO crashes within a couple of days or a 24-hour period, but hey, it's possible.
It certainly is. And I have, you know, my own personal opinions on this matter, and I sort of think that indeed there potentially were two independent crashes, but you know, whether the experts will agree with me on that remains to be seen. But again, back to the dates, I mentioned July 2nd and some of the things that justified that date, but July 3rd is a very strong candidate for the crash at Roswell, up in you know, between Roswell and Corona, but July 4th is also an equal favorite among various experts and researchers and the local residents in Roswell. In fact, I think we were told by one of our sources that July 4th is currently the big favorite date. Why? Because it's Independence Day.
It's also the beginning of the Roswell 60th anniversary celebration.
Right, that helps.
When I say that, I'm not jumping in on the side of the debunkers and saying the town's gone wild, a merchandising thing. It's only natural that they should be merchandising this thing, I think. I think the city of Roswell has actually done a favor to the nation by keeping this alive.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, keeping this story alive is that over the years, we've managed to, those of us involved in the field of ufology have managed to beat the U.S. government into the ground on this issue. They have tried a number of times to cover this up, and each time they have been quite unsuccessful, and it seems like each attempt to cover it up, and you'll remember the last thing with the Project Mogul balloon and the crash dummies falling out of airplanes, each one gets more and more ridiculous. So it's almost, I don't think there's very many people out there in the whole United States or around the world that believe the government story. I think most people believe that something really happened. And
let's talk about the four crash sites, if you don't mind, because a lot of people aren't really familiar with the idea that there might be four. Two was pretty foreign to me.
Right. Well, this is true. I mean, the story is somewhat more complex than it might appear on the surface, because part of the government disinformation that started literally right after the recovery of the craft was the fact that the crash site where a flying disc was reported to have been found by the U.S. military, and this went out on the news wire. Okay, and Mr. Hout is the one that put the press release out.
And they need to go listen to our first show in the series, the preview number one show, because we deal with that affidavit in detail. And what Walter's saying there is pretty much standard operating procedure, especially for the military, and that's redirection.
Right. And what they did was came out with the initial story, and this was approved by his commander at the Army airfield there in Roswell.
Right, Colonel Blanchard.
Right. And that was indeed that a disc was recovered. This is something, you know, not ours. And, you know, after all of the other sightings around the country in the same year of 1947, you know, I mean, this is when the modern era of UFOs actually began, even though there were just as many in the early 40s and during World War II. But, you know, 47 seems to be the year in which there really were mass sightings all over the United States in that year. It wasn't just at Roswell.
To our David Sirita interview on the previous show, he talks about all those mass sightings. He lays them out pretty well.
Right. Now,
So we have the debris field, which was the ranch, right?
Yeah, well, I'm going to point out all of the different sites here and also associated with them the different possible scenarios for what happened.
Good.
In other words, was this a UFO crash, or was this a collision between two UFOs potentially, or were there two independent UFO crashes?
And then there's the other one that seems kind of far out, but people are floating it. Maybe it was a shoot down either by us or each other, or the ETs were shooting it at each other.
Right. I mean, you might have had two UFOs and they weren't the same ETs, you know, the same species, and they were shooting at each other. There have been reports of such things occurring over the years. Not frequently, but I have heard of sightings where one UFO would go chasing after another, and then one would appear to blow up in midair. So these things may occasionally happen. So here's the sites and the possible scenarios. We'll start out with the fact that over the ranch that Mr. Brazell was in charge of, the ranch hand manager there, on the night of either July 3rd or 4th, we'll take July 2nd out of the picture here, has a lot less support, that on either the 3rd or the 4th, somewhere between 11 o'clock and midnight, during a thunderstorm, which was small and isolated out by the ranch.
You know, no sooner than we mentioned that on the broadcast, the previous broadcast about isolated thunderstorms.
Right.
We have one here. Roberta Scott called me, and she was only about a mile away, and it was sunshiny.
Right.
It was probably raining probably an inch an hour here.
That happens, yes. So at any rate, during this thunderstorm, you know, there was a, what was reported by Brazell was a bright flash of light, and not just from lightning, although that was occurring at the time, but a brilliant flash of light and an explosion of some sort. And you can say, well, maybe you heard a loud clap of thunder. Well, you know, people can tell the difference between an explosion and thunder. So you have a bright flash of light and an explosion out over the ranch, right? And he went out the next morning to investigate, and he found all of this, quote, debris. And apparently it took him a couple of days. I think this was on a Sunday or something the next morning, so he had to wait till Monday to get into town. There was some delay before he was actually able to go in and report this. So you have what is called the debris field. Now, this was initially labeled in the press release from the military as being not just a debris field, but the actual crash site
for the flying disc.
And
that was done on purpose.
Yes, because in actuality, there was another site where the real crash occurred. And this is one that is known as the Hob Corn site. It is right, you know, just a couple of miles off of the main route north and south out of Roswell.
Is that the one we have the map on?
Yes.
Okay.
And people can refer to this map as we're telling this story, because you'll see the whole scenario here. Now that, I forget the number, that's a U.S. highway, I think it's 285 or something like that, but I'm not really sure.
Click over there and see.
Right. Well, this is an old map, sort of, and it really doesn't have the route number on there in the right place. I can't really read it. At any rate, you know, it is, you'll see, a main road that goes up out of Roswell to the north, and you'll see a red circle, you know, a little spot there, and that, and there's be some arrows pointing at it, and that is the purported primary crash site. This is where bodies were found. A live ET was found, two bodies, and the craft itself, which was not a large disc-shaped object or any other kind of familiar UFO.
Yeah, yeah. On the shape. On the opening, you hear Walter saying 25 feet,
right,
or so.
This is right, and that I think is a piece of disinformation as well. Because further research shows that this object that landed was actually some 12 to 15 feet across and only 6 feet high and was egg-shaped.
Well, you listen to him talking. He didn't sound really completely convinced how big it was.
Right.
He was insinuating it was small.
Well, he actually did get to see it in the hangar, yes. Remember? And I think in his 2002 affidavit, I think he concurs that it was much smaller than 25 feet.
Yeah, yeah, and we are going to, before we go any further, since we're talking to Walter, let's play this excerpt where he says he saw the one body.
Okay, and then I'll come back and comment on
that. Yeah, and that's coming out later. So listen to the late Walter Hout, and once again, we want to thank Wendy Connors, who has recordings of just about everything.
right.
Datadisc.com.
I remember there was one body. It was a relatively small body, comparable to maybe a 10 or 11 year old child. It was pretty well beat up.
Okay, that was Walter Hout, and not many people have heard that recording. It is available, by the way, on Wendy's website, Dennis Bell Thaser, and she interviewed Walter, and it's available.
Right, that was back in the year 2000.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a whole other account. Now, Walter has a history of revealing what he knows. And this started with his initial affidavit back in 1993. And then you have the interview with Dennis and Wendy, excuse me. And this was in 2000. And then you have the 2002 witnessed affidavit. This is the one that he said, don't reveal this until I pass away. And this was done. He passed away in December 2005. And during the year of 2006, Tom and Don were able to get access to this. And it is included in their book. And, of course, we have a link out to where you can read it for yourself. All of the different points that he's making about this is what I know about the case. And interestingly enough, in that affidavit from 2002, he makes the statement that he was taken by Colonel Blanchard to Hangar 84, and he was shown the craft and the bodies, although from a distance. So he could see that the craft was, as I said, somewhat small. It was not a disc. It was an egg-shaped object. some 12 to 15 feet in length and about 6 feet high. And whether it was damaged or not, that's an open question, but I've heard many stories saying that it was. It was literally, there was a crack in its side, and this allowed access to the craft, and the live ET was able to get out of the craft. And so he saw what his affidavit states, that he saw not one body, but he saw two under a tarpaulin, but their two heads were sticking out. He could not see any details on the face.
In fairness, when he said the one here on this tape we just played, Walter, when I met him was, I think, 2003, and he was not in good health at all then.
Right.
He barely could get down to the UFO Museum. And that's one reason we didn't do a show with him. He just wasn't up to it. I mean, physically.
Well, apparently he was in pretty good shape when he did the affidavit, but he knew that he was getting ill, and that's the reason he wanted to go on record. And so at any rate, you know, it makes no difference that his story changes slightly with time, because more and more detail is revealed as time progressed, and as he got near the end of his life, he wanted to tell as much of the truth as possible, and that's understandable as well. So whether it's one or two, two is certainly the right number to fit the scenario or the rest of the story. The fact that there were five coffins ordered, you know,
And we have the story with Glenn Dennis telling me that on one of our UFO Roswell sections.
And that indicates that there were two bodies at the crash site, one live ET, and now we have to come up with three more bodies. Now that gets into the next part of the story. At the at the debris site, the story that Tom and Don are putting forth is the fact that this is something relatively new development here, but has a number of corroborating witnesses, is that there were three more bodies recovered, but they were not at another site. They, in the sense of being a crash site, in other words, there wasn't another escape capsule or pod or craft of any kind. There were just three bodies laying on the ground, not in very good shape, but certainly recognizable as bodies. Now remember, this this explosion of the craft, whether it was by collision or malfunction, occurred at a relatively low altitude over the ranch, and so the bodies were basically blown out of this craft, which was probably a disc, because that's what many of the craft during 1947 reported were, and you know, 25 to 30 feet across. Which goes along with the initial story that you were talking about from Walter about a 25-foot disc. And so if that exploded, these bodies were ejected out, and they were found 2.5 miles from the debris field. And so that totals up to five bodies, five caskets, and one live ET. Now, there's another interesting scenario, which a number of experts don't go along with, but the man swore right before he died that this was the absolute truth.
The Ragsdale impact site. That's actually at Lincoln National Forest at the foot of Sunset Peak.
And Mr. Ragsdale was out on... basically a back road, very back road, that he liked to take his girlfriends out to, And it was only a couple of miles at the most, probably one and a half, 2 miles from a little town called Annabelle. It had to be really little. And at any rate, that was the closest little town to this site. And he was out on a back road making out with his girlfriend. And they saw this object come in to the area and crash. And it was very close to them. They went over to investigate. He claims, as a part of his testimony, that he actually went up to a craft that was, as he describes it, very much like the escape pod that we mentioned at the other
site.
Yeah,
I have a quote in front of me. It was busted open. I crawled up, and they were still inside, the little people.
Right.
They didn't look
right.
Like us.
And he claims there were 3 bodies. Okay? Now, those 3 bodies are the same 3 bodies that would have been close to the debris site in the other story. And again, 3 + 2 = 5. 5 caskets needed.
Right. Now, there's a 4th one, and that's the St. Augustine crash where they found bodies, too, but we don't know anything about it. And that was 100 miles or so away.
And I know a little about it. And that's the fact that that crash could have been as a result of this collision, because no one saw the path of where this object came in. There were no observations of the event itself, only the after effects. That site is 100 miles west of Roswell, out in the plains of St. Augustine, in central New Mexico.
Yeah, and has everybody agreed that happened on July 4th?
No.
Okay.
There are people that believe that the Roswell crash happened on July 4th, and some who believe July 3rd, and there are people who believe that the crash at St. Augustine occurred on July 3rd or 4th. Depending upon which scenario you're talking about. If you're talking about the collision between 2 craft rather than an explosion, then the date would be, either July 3rd or July 4th. It could have happened either mm-hmm. way. And the crash the remains out there in St. Augustine, again, it was a fairly small object that was recovered, and how many bodies? There were 4 bodies. How do we know about this? Because the military didn't say anything about it, obviously. And interestingly enough, there's no mention of this crash by anybody at Roswell Army Airfield. Walter Hout does not mention it. General Ramey does not mention it. The commander of the base does not mention it. That indicates that perhaps that was a separate event and had a separate recovery team, even though all of the stuff ended up in the same place eventually.
The time has got us here. You have some closing comments, and then we'll give the other side of the story with William Line.
Okay. Just before, one other thing. How many bodies were at that other site? They were reported as being 4. Okay? So that wouldn't add up to give the right total on the body count and the caskets. So to me, it was 2 separate sites, 2 separate occurrences.
Okay, you have some closing thoughts here.
Right. In my opinion, the investigation of the Roswell story is still not over. But it has now gotten down to arguments over details of what happened rather than arguments over whether a UFO with ETs on board really crashed or not. The proof is in that the event happened, but the full explanation of what actually happened on that night during the first week of July is still open to further investigation. It is like we all know that the Titanic sunk, but it was only recently that we learned what really happened that night of the sinking and what caused it to sink a few years ago. Unless the U.S. government presents the evidence that they have, the craft or crafts, the wreckage debris, the ET bodies, and the records of the government's research and analysis, and allow independent reanalysis, the real truth of what happened will never be known. However, I think the preponderance of the evidence now proves, after 60 years, that one or more craft containing ET entities did crash in the state of New Mexico during the first week of July 1947.
With that, we're going to have to close. Thanks very much, Larry Dickin. We have the other side coming up in the next segment with William Line. We'll have a continuing series here on Roswell, so we have lots of material for you folks.